perspective of her memory. Unfortunately, it was difficult for my sister and me to remember her any other way. Now Ina is only allowed on supervised outings. Sometimes she escapes and is seen with her cloud of white hair and blue watery eyes that are desperate, looking for something that cannot be found. She waited for me behind the bushes and grabbed my hand and wrenched my body towards her and said, "Do you seek the heavenly pearl, the godly pearl spoken in Matthew 13:45-46? I looked into her pale eyes, scared. I nodded my head slowly. "Good girl, good girl." Then she loosened her grip and wandered off down the garden. It felt as if Ina had given me a gift, imparted something vital and important that I might not understand in my tender years, but might need later on. I wrote it down when I was back in my room. She had gifted me a parable, a very powerful, talisman-like object. It seemed to me that there was a lot to be learned from parables, that they could teach you life skills and give you a way of being. You had to look underneath the words of Jesus. A pearl was not just a pearl, and you had to look beyond the savage jungle of the Bible stories of Samson slaying his enemies with a poor donkey's freshly killed jawbone. I thought, if I concentrated hard enough and shut out all the other noises around me, I could let Jesus and all the other gods in the world inside, and I too could write parables. It fast became a little hobby of mine. The gods visited me at annoying, unexpected times, when I was not ready for them at all. When I asked, I did not receive, and when I least expected them, they arrived with no effort. I took to carrying a pen in the elastic of my knickers and would write them down in my arms like little aphorisms, like, "The tree opens and closes and we never hear it," or, "Even the shiny body of a worm travels with the Lord." Occasionally, I enlisted David's help, as I knew if he did it, he would be very careful and precise. "I can do this for you, Ruby. Trust me. I can write it on you. Make it look really nice," he reassured me, scrutinizing the paper. At some point, it became very hard to write on my midriff. My little breasts interfered, and I was still of prepubescent age where breasts were not to be trifled with. Slowly, David and I would begin our quiet ceremony. I would stretch the skin on my torso taut as a canvas on a frame, and he would feed the tip of the pen and copy the patterns and the curlicued script, and when his mouth was very near my navel, I would touch the top of his hair lightly with my hand. All good things end, and it came to a head one day as Matilda in gym class put up her hand in the changing rooms. "Excuse me, Miss Hunt, Ruby is poisoning her blood with her pen." And then Miss Hunt took me to another room and had a careful look at my parables. I thought she might have read them at least and gained a little depth and insight. But all she said was, "No, Ruby, no. This won't do at all. You need to find ways to control your imagination." The Ina we knew liked frosty cereal, malt loaf, and mushroom soup out of a tin. Being in Ina and Alf's kitchen was like stepping into a foreign TV show without the subtitles or the sultry, high-cheekboned women. Their kitchen had the smell of old boiled eggs overladen with the smell of dark tobacco smoke, and there was another smell I couldn't reach, maybe because when you were young, you haven't smelt all the things you are going to smell yet. There were rumours of a small dog no one had seen that was being kept in the house, and I kept an eye out for the creature, but didn't come upon it on this occasion. The kitchen was originally painted in a bright yellow. The walls were very dirty now, but shiny, glossy, and there were raised brownish marks flecking the surface like little raisins. I didn't know if there were dead flies or even bits of desiccated meat, and I didn't want to touch anything. A pair of tall...